Welcome to the Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders that are shaping our future. Hey, I'm H.R. Huntsman, founder of Leader's Edge, creator of the Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University. And I'm thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each and every episode, we champion the innovative strategies, courageous decisions, and inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So whether you're looking to be inspired or refined your leadership skills, my friend, you are in the right place. Today on the show, we're diving into the future of metal fabrication, leadership in family enterprise, and what it really takes to build an operation that lasts. I'm joined by two outstanding leaders from Co Press Equipment, Reed Co, president of the company, and his sister, Catherine Chun, director of operations. Reed has been guiding Co's strategic direction for more than a decade, driving innovation in coil processing and precision manufacturing, while Catherine brings rare cross-functional depth, having led across engineering, purchasing, HR, and sales. She's learned to strengthen systems, lean execution, and organize health. Together, they represent the blend of vision and operational excellence that defines world-class manufacturing organizations. Today, we're going to talk leadership inside a multi-generational business, building a culture of continuous improvement, and what excites them most about where the manufacturing industry is headed. So be ready to get inspired as we welcome to the show Reed Co. and Catherine Chun. Reed and Catherine, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We are at FabTech 2025, and you've been here how many years? Your company's been here how many years?
We think roughly 30.
30 yeah. years. Co-Press Equipment.
Yep.
So I didn't know what you did until I just met you.
Right.
Fascinating. Tell our listeners more about what you do, then we're going to deep dive into leadership stuff.
We manufacture coil handling systems. They're like equipment that take those big, they look like toilet paper rolls of steel on the back of trucks.
Okay.
So we take those coils and we unwind them and we stress relieve them. So the importance of stress relief is that when those coils are made, they cool from the outside in. And so they actually have different stresses stored in the material, meaning the material wants to go in different directions.
Interesting.
And not uniformly across the strip. So what our machine does is it actually removes those stresses and then sets a uniform grain.
Okay. Pallet.
Yeah, right. So that when you go to form that part, it's the same thing every time. Or when you go to laser cut it, it doesn't start to go in all sorts of different directions.
Okay.
So yeah. We feed steel into presses, or we can make a bunch of blanks so I can go on the laser cutter,
right.
Plasma cutter.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Now, the start of your company is fascinating. Your dad started it. Share with us how he got started. It's an amazing story.
Yeah,
dad grew up just being super mechanical, taking cars apart, motorcycles,
yeah.
Racing everywhere. Ended up losing his license, going to Vietnam, came back, and he was just a salesman. I mean, he could sell anything, you know, paper,
right.
Newspaper, wine, really anything he did. Then he started selling.
I was just going to say, just with the paper thing, and what I was reminded of is that he was the number one salesman for the Detroit Free Press, right? Is that what it was?
Yep.
But he couldn't, because he didn't have a college degree, because he tried twice and then went to the Army.
Yeah.
And got his GED in the Army.
But, is that right?
Yeah, so they wouldn't pay him more than what he was being paid at the Detroit Free Press. So he thought, you know, that was kind of choking my opportunities, right?
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, he left. He was like, I'll tell anyone, you know, and I'm not going to let you hold me back type deal.
Nice.
So, yeah, he started selling air feeds, wanted to work somewhere that was more, you know, better communication. So he left that company, started selling a bunch of, like, parts and service equipment.
Yep.
And then after 3 years, his customer called him and was like, hey, I want you to build me a machine. His customer actually came and helped him build the machine and paid him to do it. And then he's been doing it ever since.
And so, this was 1976.
Six. Yeah.
50th year coming up next year.
Yeah, coming up next year.
Wow.
We're doing a big thing in Las Vegas FabTech, actually.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So,
might even get John Coe out here.
Yeah. Get him out to Sin City.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's feeling a little sad he's not here. Isn't his favorite. But,
no,
you know,
it's not his favorite.
No.
So what is it about your dad? And then I want to hear what you kids learned. So it's a brother, sister, they're twins. I want to hear what the kids learned from dad. So let's talk about dad first. What makes dad so successful? Can sell anything. So he's obviously charismatic.
Yeah. I think he just genuinely loves people.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he loves people. He really loves God, too. So he always wants to do the right thing. And he forgives himself and others, but he also knows where to, like, draw the business line.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll give you some examples. Like, he's a master class when you watch somebody engage with somebody, with another person. He walks into Starbucks, and so he'll walk, his thing at Starbucks is, he'll walk in, he'll put two hands out, and he'll have placed a dollar in one and $5 in the other. And he'll go, pick the hand. You can either win big or win small. And they'll pick the hand. He always gives them both. But it's this engagement.
Interesting.
For somebody's in their mundane day, and something happens to them that they never have happened to them.
Okay.
And it's just a natural thing that he just comes up with, where his conscience is very clear. And he just engages with people where they feel like, oh my gosh, this guy's actually cares about my day.
So generous.
It's a wild
thing. With his words, with his...
Yeah, but it's actually in quality time. It's like an engagement.
Time, okay.
Yeah, he is a very generous guy. But the thing that really stands out, because there's a lot of people that are generous, but you just don't feel them when they can give you money. You're kind of like, okay.
Yeah, no.
But with him, it's like, oh man, this guy's like really engaging with me.
I meant generous with his spirit. Generous.
He pulls you out of a low place really quick.
Okay.
Like really quick. Yeah, very inspirational.
You obviously adore him.
Yes.
What's the biggest lesson he's taught you?
I would say to never give up.
Never give up, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether people believe in you or not, never, you know, just keep going, never give up.
Good.
Yeah, so. For me, he strives for quality in a way that, you know, sometimes I've been a DIY car guy myself, and so, like, making it work has been a thing for me.
Okay.
But watching how he kind of draws the line on where he calls something quality or not quality is such a high line, but it's so good to learn from, right?
Right.
It's a good place to strategize from, as opposed to pulling down cost, carte blanche. His way of, he always adds quality and then does cost through manufacturing.
Okay.
Never does it through cutting structure or...
Okay. The quality of the product.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's just it's something I keep learning. You know, I think I got there and he'll still challenge me on that. And it's it's really cool.
We work with a lot of family companies, large and small. So I'm curious about your journey as you watch your dad build this thing and your kids, and you've probably lived it from birth, I imagine. What's your journey in the company to where you are now?
Well, Catherine came there before I did.
Graduated on time.
She did.
Sister Jabba.
But it was kind of, well, the thing was, is Reed went into musical theater, so he was going to go to New York. And then, I graduated in 2009.
Pull that out.
And the recession happened, so my dad wasn't going to hire anyone new, but one of his long-term buyers had throat cancer. So I came in, and I actually was working at Macaroni Grill, because, you know, no one was getting a job in 2009 in Detroit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So, it was a tough time.
Yeah, so I helped out, you know, like, I worked at Macaroni Grill, and then I helped out at Co-Press. So that's kind of, you know, I didn't grow up thinking, oh, I can't wait to work at Co-Press, you know? I was like, that was probably the last place I ever thought I would work. So
I think the only one in our, out of the kids, because we have an older brother as well.
Okay.
I think he was really the only one that ever considered it, working at the family business.
Yeah.
Catherine and I never really pined for that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And our brother Hunter is just like our dad. He is a salesman through and through.
Okay.
And he started at Co-Press first.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So, in sales?
In sales.
In sales,
okay.
Yeah, and now he has his own dealer company.
Okay.
So he's a reseller of presses.
And he buys from you and
sells.
Okay,
Well, he sells our equipment.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he sells a lot of other people's equipment.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, I would say, like, you know, growing up, our family was unique in where when the times were good, the times were good, and when the times were bad, we pulled it back, you know? And that's where, you know, other people, like our dad, since even till this day, he's like, we've got all of these employees, like all of these families are counting on us, you know?
Yeah, and we would feel the same pain.
Yeah, and he would just be very concerned about that. And, you know, I would be like, well, they can work other places too, you know, like we all can, but he's like, no, you know, this is, you know, so he felt more about like trying to, you know, support everyone. So I think that was what we really felt growing up. We didn't really feel much of Co-Press. Like my dad, our grandfather made a point to be at every single one of my dad's, like, sports games. And our dad was like that, too. But, you know, we definitely had a dad that, you know, when he came home, he was tired. Or there was, you know, a lot of travel, different stuff like that. But he didn't miss one of our sporting events.
No.
Wow.
Never did.
You know, and, and then as we worked at Co-Press, you know, we noticed, like, there's different things, I think, along the lines of, like, you know, you have a team that could be jealous right? And then you've got this team that's worked with you as leadership for years, and then your kids come in, and they're jealous, but you believe your kids, and you're kind of like, you know, and then you're also used to living like more of a lax lifestyle because, you know, but then you would do the random deep dives, which you should do, you know.
You should.
So then you kind of came back more
right
into the company, okay. And you know, I think it's been like a growing aspect ever since. Like, it's kind of, you know, your whole life you have kids and you rechange your schedule, then your kids go off and you're like, oh, and then you kind of get sick and you rechange your schedule,
right.
And, you know, and
right.
So I think that there's always a balance between your work life and leadership,
right,
for
and
sure.
Especially introducing your kids to the company and
right.
Like us figuring out, because the big thing for our dad was, you know, like, dad hired an electrical engineer because he couldn't do that. He wouldn't want to do it,
no,
you know, and then
right.
He was like, hey, you do great at that. Good
yeah.
job. Like, keep doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like with us, you know, when Hunter was there and then when I was there and then when Reed came, it's kind of like, okay, where's everyone's niche?
Yeah.
Like, where's your purpose?
Okay. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a big part of my dad. He tries to put people on their spots and then encourages them to grow.
Yeah.
Good. How has your dad made you earn your spots, or how have you earned your spots so you don't just have the nepotism kind of vibe about you? You're just given these really important seats.
Yeah, no, so that's been interesting. It's a different, so each one of us kids had a different route. Because I was in New York, I came in last. And so, like, Catherine and Hunter carried that cross, so to speak, more than I had to carry it.
Okay.
And I'm grateful. I came in sales, service sales, aftermarket.
Okay.
So in New York, my wife and I were doing auditions, and we were doing, you know, national tours and things like that. And then for us, like, things just seemed to start to shift. So I got a hold of Hunter, who was kind of running the company at the time. And I said, hey, I need like some side hustle work. Like, could I just make some calls for you guys? I know the equipment well enough. I could just talk about it with somebody and maybe increase the closing ratio on parts orders or something. And so he gave me that side gig. And then all of a sudden, my wife just started getting dreams of this book, and we looked at each other and said, let's just go home so she can have a career as an author, and I would go to Copress. And so then I started my life in aftermarket. Dad always paid us less than our contemporaries, almost always, at least 15-20%, something like that.
He made you earn it.
Yeah, for a long time.
Good for him.
Up until like 4 or 5 years ago, we were paid significantly less than our contemporaries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did that feel right to you? Did it feel punitive, or did it feel like we gotta earn our stripes?
I was always thankful because, you know, I didn't get held accountable for vacation hours or things like that. Like, you know, like, I was able to go to Florida with our family for Christmas. And even though I had a job to do still when I was away, it wasn't like I was held to the cross. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't have a manager being like, no, John Coe, you can't take your daughter, you know,
right.
different things like that.
Yeah,
so,
true.
You know, and then there's certain things I think, you know, like, money can make a lot of people feel scared, right? But our dads also, and mom, have been very generous as well.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes if we'd be like, oh, man, they'd be like, I paid your car off. You know, like,
you're
like, oh, nice.
Right.
You know,
right.
Thank you.
Okay,
for
very good.
You know, like,
yeah, there were moments. They let the pressure sit enough, but would, you know, there were definitely moments where they relieved the pressure.
Good.
Yeah.
But I
really
do think, you know, there is, I would be not telling the truth if I didn't say there were definitely, like, some animosity at times throughout our family. You know, and more so, like, think about it, like, men feel like they need to support the family, right? You know, I am naturally the most frugal person. Like, I don't like shopping for anything. Like, you know, stuff
all
like
right.
that. So for me, I was like, sweet, whatever. You know, but there was also definitely times where I was like, yo, this is, like, respect levels.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I appreciate
value,
the vulnerability,
right?
actually.
Like, there's a value, too. Like,
yeah, no, I'm glad you're honest about it.
I think the biggest thing when you look back is that the company prior to us coming in and leadership changeovers, right? There was kind of two leadership changeovers at our business. There was one when Hunter came in, our oldest brother, there was major resistance.
To him.
They didn't want him there. And if you can think about it, it's a natural progression in any company. So what happens is the children start to get older. The owner, father, mother, whatever it is, their bank starts to fill up a little bit more. And so they have more free time.
Sure.
And so they start spending free time with their kids. And so then the people that are there start to take on this maybe false sense of ownership. There's a good sense of ownership, and then there's an entitlement sense of ownership.
Okay.
Right? So they start picking up entitlement. And then all of a sudden the kids shows up, and they're like, well, this is our place. And so you have to work through that, right?
This is good.
that's the bug that hits. Because it usually is a little bit of distance, because Hunter's 18, Dad can go boating with him. The kids, Catherine and I were 13, we could start doing stuff like that too. We're traveling a little bit more, you know, we're way more. And so that's where, you know, that's where that distance starts to make people feel a little, they can fall into the trap of entitlement. That's a better way of putting it.
Yeah. I love that you're bringing this to light, because again, we see this in so many companies we work with, these hidden dynamics that are going on that you as leaders, you're now in C-suite positions, you have to struggle with, and you're going to, I don't know if you have your own kids, or going to follow in that same journey, and you have to figure out how much to give them, how much to test them. Yeah. It's a tough journey for us.
And the biggest thing is, I think, is metrics. So, like, when you don't, like, for a time, we didn't have metrics. So, for example, we didn't have metrics that held people accountable.
Right.
That's the best way to put it.
Right.
So, when someone's away and they're not, someone isn't minded to, you kind of have to keep turning the kaleidoscope to see a new color to not get so saturated on the one. Because what happens is that thing gets stagnant, then people figure out how to kind of trick the system. And and I'm not saying people did this maliciously, but they were trying to present a number to John Coe. So they figured out how to make the number that he wanted to look the way he wanted it.
Right.
And then you kind of get lost in the why didn't it translate to the bottom line. Usually Catherine and I were in board meetings earlier on, like in 2012 or something like that. Something earlier than that. And so we would always be in these meetings where it would be like, okay, we had the margin we wanted, but why is the bottom line so far off of the margin? And it was like, so that's where it starts to show up, right? But for them, there are all these excuses, reasons why. And I'm not saying that they did this nefariously. I'm not saying they did this. We're not making them bad people.
We're not accountants.
But I'm just saying, like, that's how the entitlement manifests, is in kind of catering and curating things, right?
Right.
But there's, I'm not saying also, because I want to lay it down for any listeners, it's not to say that ownership or second generation can have just as much entitlement, if not more.
Of course.
I think, what, 30% or something like that make it.
Yeah.
The rest, 70%, don't make it, right?
It's tough to take over from a founder.
You know, any of the people, there are a lot of great people at Copress. Catherine came up with, actually, when they get 30 years at Copress, we give them Rolexes with their name on the back, and it says, thank you for your service, 30 years. We got a lot of people walking around with Rolexes on.
I think that was Dad.
Was it Dad? Okay, okay. Dad. But either way, you know, that's a thing that we love, and we're talking about a sensitive subject.
Yeah.
That's
a real subject, though.
Yeah.
Let's shift to leadership now. As you kids have grown up in leadership under your dad, you now have four generations of people very possibly working at Copress. Dad is boomer generation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have some Gen X, my generation.
Yeah.
You're millennials, probably.
Yep.
Gen Z underneath you.
We have Gen Zs already, yep.
Right? You're trying to lead all of them. I'm curious how you're juggling all of that, trying to continue generosity and high bar of accountability and your dad's amazing interpersonal skills, like all of that. How are you juggling all that?
I mean, I think a lot of it's through prayer and communication.
Okay.
You know, like Reed and I recently pretty much just started going to, like, I call it twin therapy, but it's
very good.
Yeah, but like Reed and I have a time, and it's like once a month now, and you know, maybe it'll go like every 2 weeks, where we just kind of like we plan out a time for us too, and like a third party that we both trust, and that person's not emotionally involved, you know, but they're very fair, because you can have people who, as they get older, they have higher emotions, or they want to be recognized. It's hard when you're going to retire. You're like, where's my legacy? What did
I
do with my life? You know?
Yeah.
Or you have young people that are like, woohoo, you know, but they're also like, they have anxiety or can't pass any drug test anywhere ever. Okay, so we got that, you know, but a lot of it, when it comes down to it, that Reed and I see, it's about communication and making people feel safe.
Yeah, it is.
You know, like
setting a culture of authenticity.
That's good.
Like, if you can just be authentic.
Yeah, and like taking your emotion out of it. Like, there's so many things where people get caught up on people's wordings, you know? And I'm like, why don't we just like not hyper focus on this one thing and just think about in general? I've noticed this happen multiple times. Let's think about in general what the process is.
Okay. Yeah.
So now we can just have a process and not emotions.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Let me talk to each of you real fast. Catherine, what, as a leader, let's go with, what are you really good at? And where would you say, I need to sharpen this skill set as a leader?
You know, I can't really think about what I'm good at. I smile, I guess. I'm a good smiler.
You have a great smile.
Catherine's very organized.
So you have a hard time saying it yourself.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, I'm like, well, I could keep growing in a lot of different ways, but
Okay. No,
I think a lot of people, you know, I think I do, I can make people laugh and I smile a lot, which I think is, like, definitely a leadership thing, like, that's kind of come from dad, but I think things that I can work on, too, are, like, my time management.
Time management?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you get, as a leader, you, especially the owner, or, like, the daughter of the owner, you can get pulled into so many different directions.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it can be hard to kind of, like, focus exactly where you're at, or even be present. Like, being at FabTech, like, don't be on your phone. Be present with what's going on right here.
Right.
You know, like, there's so many different things about your time.
Reed, but how about you? What are you really good at?
Do you mind if I tag on to her? So she's really good at being organized.
Okay.
She's very pragmatic.
Okay.
And on things that she doesn't understand, she delegates with humility. So she does a really good job at getting somebody engaged when it's not a subject expert area in her, in, you know, in her mind.
All right.
So I would say that. And then also, she's a new mom of 3 years, right? So you're still navigating a lot of that stuff. And she balances all this really well.
Okay.
For me, I think because of all of my theater experience, I do pretty well at, like, presentations.
Sure.
I do pretty well at, like, energy group gathering. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So I can get an energy of a group going and focus it.
Okay.
That's something that I'm pretty good at. I'm not the most organized. I'm scattered because I love a lot of things. I also love applications and mechanical stuff. Like, you know, if I could get an honorary engineering degree, I would. Because I love all of that stuff.
Interesting.
You know?
All right.
Yeah. And then also another thing I would say, I am not the most observant of things. And that's an area that we're working on, is me picking up maybe on the subtleties of people and where their hearts are at right in the room.
Interesting.
That's where we are, you know, Catherine maybe is on one side of that balance and I'm on the other side of that balance.
Okay.
And we're learning how to, you know, find some momentum together in that. But,
it's interesting that you said that, because when she couldn't find anything really positive to say about herself, you're ready to jump in and defend your sister to herself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it feels like you have a real positive, maybe it's just to your sis, but
A
real positive, like, I want to praise you and lift you up kind of vibe about you.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's talk about, I'd love to hear very practically, what's your leadership cadence look like? How often do you meet with people? What size of meetings? I'm always fascinated by how people lead companies well.
We run on EOS.
Okay.
So it's the level 10s, it's weekly.
Yeah, very good.
We actually have it pushed all the way down into each department.
Okay, nice
job.
And
then they have quarterly meetings. This year we did biannual meetings.
Okay.
So each group takes a whole day to kind of reframe their mind on what we did accomplish and what we need to actually accomplish for the rest
Perfect.
Of the year. And then we do an annual meeting. We vision cast up to 10 years out, and then we pull that vision back to now.
Nice.
And that's just EOS.
Yeah,
And then you've got, you know, we have an org chart that's not too flat, but not too, you know, too busy type deal.
Okay,
so,
very good.
You know, like, we follow up on our level 10s. And, you know, like, I make a point to try to go to all of my department's level 10s at least once a month.
Right.
Okay.
You know, not weekly, but then, and then, you know, we do a leadership meeting every Monday.
Yeah.
So all of us leaders.
How many is that?
How many leaders?
Yeah.
I think the room's 8 that report to me.
Okay.
And then, Catherine, you have 5 managers, something like that,
because
we're about a 90 something person company.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, 92 something.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah,
because I report to Reed, but then I'm also a board member, so that's
So she sits board
and
underneath, which is another
that's
really cool subject
to
bring up, because even when, like, Catherine's in purchasing, she's still Catherine Co. So there is this weird thing, you know.
Sure.
There's one of our competitors, his name's Philip Chaco, Dallas Industries. I told him that, and it was funny, because 2 years later he came and he's like, I didn't know what you're talking about. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, Reed was so right. They don't treat you the same way, right? So, like, even if you report to somebody, you can see, I call it a political spirit, kind of comes out, and they want to grab your ear and do something, if you can do something for them, or make their priority a higher priority, right? So what Catherine's talking about being, like, reporting, so that's another thing that we have to navigate, where in the same room, we can have a meeting where she reports to me, and then another one where I report to her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just an interesting,
that is interesting.
Dynamic.
Hence the twin therapy.
Anyways.
Right? Twin therapy, yeah.
Anyway.
And it's just natural, right? If you know it's coming, then you can at least handle it with humility, because it's not that person's fault for playing that. And then, like, if I, you know, we have our own, we're going through the twin therapy for this.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I love
it. Like, it's not like anybody, we're not better than anybody, but it's just a natural thing that you have to expect.
I love
that
you're willing,
like,
to work on
it. You have to be cool with that. Like, you know, there's one thing that our dad taught us growing up, like, having business partners doesn't really work. Because eventually you will have different opinions, you know? And there have been times, too, where Reed was like, Catherine, you're the hardest manager I manage. And I was like, well, that's because I retweet, you know? Like, but at the end of the day, like, I want Reed to be running. Like, you know, like, I do a lot of things. I'm like, this is up to you, but I will, you know, this is my opinion, you know, or something like that. And we are navigating that better, but, Reed is the one, you know, like, and I always tell him, I'm like, Reed, you're doing great. You're the one to run it. Like, you're the one.
Good
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
stuff
that's
like
gotta
that.
Be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's been an awesome journey. Not easy, but awesome for sure.
Tell me about a fantastic co-press equipment team member. If someone wanted to join your team, I'm doing a workshop on Thursday, Winning the War for Talent.
Yeah.
What does a great new teammate look like for you? What are you looking for in today's modern labor force?
You know, I think of someone who, like, can take criticism, but also can, like, laugh about, like, let's take on the opportunity.
Okay.
Not, like, be like, you know, rawr, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
But also, like, defend their stance, defend their people, like, be confident in themselves enough, you know.
Right.
And I'm thinking of Paul.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how he's...
Sandrock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he's,
we have seven Pauls or eight Pauls.
We have a lot of Pauls.
They just work.
We're a baseball based company, you know what I mean? We got to just go straight.
We're going to make a team, a baseball team called Baseball.
Discipleships
everywhere,
yeah. Yeah. Jason's coming up next, too.
Yeah, Jason is another rising name.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
So receive critique well.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Reed? What's cool about Paul is, and this is the thing, I'm thinking of the same lines, is like you have... So you have this balance in anything, is it's picking up somebody that has enough experience, but not too much indoctrination.
Okay.
Right?
That's okay, great. So that's
the
a
way,
great tension.
That's kind of like your sweet spot.
Okay.
But the thing is that you don't have to, they're not always opposing.
Right.
So you can have somebody whose mind isn't like an indoctrinated mind, but they have a lot of experience. They're a creative problem solver, right?
Right.
Which was like a neat, you know, like a, that's a cliche word of the early 2000s, right? It was like creative problem solver. It's like on the resume. But I think if you can just find somebody, like Catherine said, who can clue in to the problems you're trying to solve and then apply their experience to solving those problems in the way that the company is looking at it.
Okay.
So they have to be able to put on the eyes of the company. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
While still saying, here is some outside of the box thinking.
Okay.
But the problem is that most people fall into an extreme where they're either like a yes man or they fight you the whole way,
right?
So like somebody who's really balanced, and that's what Paul is a great example of that,
right?
Who Catherine found, by the way. Well, she pulled back, actually. She got him there the first time.
Yeah.
And then he went and did some, he worked for JR Automation and a couple other companies. And then Catherine pulled him back, which was just...
Yeah.
She got the higher of the year plate for that one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, and I know, to be honest with you, I'm not very mechanically based. I'm definitely growing and learning.
Like,
okay. You know, I could go out there and sell anything now, but I didn't know what, you know, Paul's an engineer, right? But I look more for, like, personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know...
Like your dad.
Like, do you need your pad backed 800 times?
Yeah.
Are you... emotional, like, you know, are you able to take criticism but keep going, like, you know, because there's always work to be done,
and
there's always problems, but those are all opportunities.
Okay.
You know,
so critical thinker, problem solver, receives critique, good personality,
but he's not scared to say something, like, you know, we've worked with a couple of guys, you know, and they just are like, yes Kevin. And I was like, no, I want you, I don't know this, like, you gotta tell me what you think, you know, like, stuff like that.
So
where they just were going in agreement, but they weren't actually adding their sauce to the solution. You know what I mean?
We call it creative conflict.
That's
the way we teach it, creative conflict.
Okay,
let's finish with this. You guys are fantastic, by the way. I could go for a long time with the two of you. Let's finish with this one. You're second generation. I want to ask you to pretend like you're talking to a young person just getting into leadership or just moving up in their parents' company. What advice would you give that young person just beginning their leadership journey about how to succeed in business?
I would tell them to find a mentor.
Find a mentor.
I would tell them to find a mentor who has had similar situations, but also someone who you feel like God is, like, leading you to, like, go with your gut feeling about this mentor.
Okay.
Like, and I recently just got a mentor.
Good
and, you know,
you.
They can change over time, too. And your mentor isn't someone that, you know, hurt. They just want you to grow.
Yeah, for sure.
There's an interview for playing on the PMA booth. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh, really?
We were walking by it, and I was walking with Lindsay and I go, that's Catherine's mentor.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I can't even tell you, like, even as I've talked to her, I'm like, wow, like, God really brought, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, she was, like, placed in front of me, like a gift from God, and it's just been so cool even to be,
yeah.
like, with, like, everything, you know, and I feel like,
yeah.
and taking time to unwind, too. Okay. Like, I like to go for walks.
Okay.
And I could think about things or not think about things, but, like, the physical... just unwind time, like, and it can even be like a car ride. Like, my husband, he used to live right next to his work, and now we live 30 minutes away, and he needs that before we live a toddler night.
Yeah.
3 years old, right?
Four
now.
We're getting spicy.
Yeah.
We have opinions, but then we also wonder why the sky's not purple.
Yeah.
I want it to be purple.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Yeah. Why is it blue?
I have a 4-year-old grandson.
Yeah.
That's spicy.
What advice would you give that 20-something just starting in business and leadership?
Well, we have somebody like that.
Okay. What advice would you give him or her?
Yeah, he's wonderful. I just tell him to take his time.
Take your time.
Yeah, that actually, the thing that you think you need to do right now, you don't have to.
Okay.
And just do the thing that needs to be done right now.
Good.
And also, I think Catherine's absolutely right. If you don't have covering, so like what covering gets you like this with a mentor, you actually get to leapfrog time.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right, sure.
So like those are the things where you actually don't treat time like it's wasting. You treat time like you're just stewarding it, right? You're like, this is the best way for me to take care of this right now.
So good.
Because that's the thing that really plagued me. I had started and then since have shut down a company. It was an automotive aftermarket company for Audi stuff. Like we made billet engine blocks, supercharger kits. And the whole time I was there, I felt like I was out of time. And it made me make decisions that were hasty decisions. And it compounds your losses because you take a lot of Hail Marys. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't, and most teams don't win with Hail Marys.
So good.
Right? So that's the thing. Start small. And then let it scale fast.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Catherine says, get a mentor, which assumes a teachable spirit.
Yeah.
So get a mentor, be teachable.
Yep.
Take your time. Don't rush everything.
Yeah.
Slow down. Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast.
That's right.
Okay. Very good. I love it.
Yeah.
Reed, Catherine, thank you so much for your time. Gold nuggets here. I wish you the best.
Thanks.
I champion you. I mean, I love what you're building and honored you took time to be on my show.
Thank you.
You're
this
welcome.
Was just a lovely experience.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
You guys are a pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm a Christ follower myself.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm a Christ follower myself, so I love the faith that you're putting into your company, the way you treat people, everything you shared. I love it. So
it's all a blessing.
Yeah.
I hope you're proud of yourselves. I'm sure your dad's very proud of you.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And that's one of our first core values, actually, is faith and family first.
Yeah.
So, like, people don't have to be a Christian, but they need to pursue something that shifts them, right? Because it anchors them to
good.
Because we profess Christ. That's all this
I could
is
tell,
for us.
Obviously,
but, but that's so key.
Yeah.
For people to, like, get... They have to be three-dimensional. People are supposed to be three, five, four, five-dimensional, right? And that's how you create balance when you have an opposite but equal force in your life.
Yeah.
So that's why the founding fathers had so much insights, because they created these equal but opposite forces.
Right.
Yeah.
It's no wonder that your company is growing like it is with you guys.
Thanks.
I hope you're proud of yourselves.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of The Leader's Edge. Thank you for joining us. I hope today's conversation with Reed and Catherine inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and impact. Here are my three big takeaways from my conversation with the brother and sister dynamic duo. Number one is team first. These two are passionate about making sure their team is empowered and supported. I think all the high-performing companies that I work with, that is true as well. Number two, I was so impressed with this one. Get the relationship right. The fact about their openness and vulnerability, that they are getting counseling together as brother and sister, so their own family dynamics don't hurt the company, that to me was extraordinary. Get the relationship right. And number three, people by people. What I mean by that is people, they want to work with people they like, know, and trust. Every business is the people business. People don't just buy products or services, they buy great relationships. All right, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I would love a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders just like you. That's the whole point of the Leader's Edge. Please stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leader's Edge Podcast on all major platforms. Until next time. Keep pushing boundaries. Keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman, and I'll see you soon.